It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Upping the ante on the unvaccinated. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard. President Biden has announced new mandates on Americans who've yet to receive the COVID shot.
This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We've been patient. But our patience is wearing thin.
Companies of more than 100 workers now face fines if employees do not get vaccinated or at least tested once a week for the virus.
Some of the biggest companies are already requiring this. United Airlines, Disney, Tyson's Food, and even Fox News.
Two-thirds of America's workforce, 100 million people, are impacted by the president's get-the-jab-or-lose-your-job policy. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
I do not believe that people should lose their jobs over this issue, and we will fight that.
Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves calls the president's posturing nothing short of tyranny.
You know, we live in America, and you would expect words like that from the president, maybe of communist China or of North Korea, but you don't expect words like that coming out of the mouth of the President of the United States.
Already more than 175 million of us, U.S., have been vaccinated, but that's not good enough, according to the President.
We need to do more. This is not about freedom. It's about protecting yourself and those around you.
Mr. Biden doubling down on face masks, too. Starting today, fines will be increased to $500 for anyone who refuses to mask up on a plane.
If you break the rules, be prepared to pay. And by the way, show some respect.
Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
Joe Biden was more hostile towards the unvaccinated in his speech than he has been towards the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Eddie Scarry with the Federalist says if Mr. Biden wanted to win over the American people with last night's speech, he missed the mark.
This speech will do nothing to stop the spread of this virus. Cases are going up. He was handed two great gifts coming into office, plummeting case numbers and vaccines. Where are we right now? And yes, it is going to hurt him politically.
Former Vice President Mike Pence says it is interesting to note the change of heart the Biden administration has had regarding the COVID shot.
They spent the whole last year undermining public confidence in the vaccine. If you remember my vice presidential debate, I called out Kamala Harris. I said, you got to stop playing politics with people's lives, because she said she wouldn't take a vaccine that President Trump had created.
President Biden's approval rating when it comes to COVID has dropped 10 points since just June, according to the latest poll from ABC News. Now to Afghanistan, the White House under fire for referring to the Taliban as professional and businesslike. Press Secretary Jen Psaki was pressed on that during a Q&A with Peter Doocy of Fox News.
Their interior minister has an FBI wanted poster. He's got a $10 million bounty on his head.
We are here to celebrate the return of American citizens who wanted to leave Afghanistan successfully on a Qatari Airlines flight. And in order to get those people out, we had to work with some members of the Taliban to press them and to work in a businesslike manner to get them out. Okay. That is what we were stating in the statement.
And in that statement, it says this is a positive first step. Towards what?
Towards getting additional people out who want to leave Afghanistan.
The Taliban on Thursday nearly whipped to death two Afghan reporters who were covering the public flogging of women protesters in Kabul.
And these are two journalists, a photographer and a journalist, who were working for a reputable agency over there. They're filming a woman's protest. The Taliban doesn't want us to see that, so they beat him, and they almost beat him to death. These two guys thought they were dying, beat him with whips and cables and anything they can find. They did it for a while, stepping on their faces, kicking him in the head. And they had one of the Taliban guys say, "You're lucky you weren't beheaded." The Taliban's not businesslike. They're gross. They're evil. They're brutal. And if you can believe this, they lie.
Rob O'Neill is the Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden. California's gubernatorial candidate Larry Elder is hoping to pull off a political upset in next week. Recall election. It will happen Tuesday. Elder was subjected to a hate crime this week when a woman in a gorilla mask threatened him in Venice Beach.
You know, if I were a Democrat, obviously, this would be called systemic racism. They'd be calling it a hate crime. I don't like to play that game. I do know this. There was a big article about me, a negative, in the New York Times. It never once mentioned that I'm black. Never once mentioned that I would be the first black governor of California. I never made a big deal out about that. I don't want people to vote for me or against me because I'm black. But on the very very same page of the New York Times, there was a big article about the, quote, first female governor of New York, close quote. Even though she didn't get elected, she was basically appointed because the other governor resigned. So they cared about the first when it was a female Democrat, but couldn't give a rip about the first when it was a black Republican.
Most polls show Larry Elder running behind Governor Gavin Newsom in the run-up to next week's recall election. Tomorrow marks 20 years since 9/11. Memorials planned for New York City, Washington, and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Alice Greenwald is the president of the 9/11 Museum in Lower Manhattan.
20 years is the span of a generation. And we're actually in a moment now where 9/11 is transitioning from memory to history.
2,996 people were killed when 19 radical Islamic terrorists hijacked four commercial jetliners and turned them into missiles.
And that day changed all of our lives forever. I don't care who you are, what your background is. For two decades, the trajectory of your life changed. This was not just a New York City thing or a Pentagon thing or a Shanksville thing. This was a New York City thing and a Kansas City thing and an Oklahoma City thing and every other small town in between.
Pete Hegseth of Fox News.
What makes 20 years so significant is that it's a generational turn. It's a generational turn of people today who never lived those events and are now learning about them in history books or not learning about them. And so that begs the question to me on 9/10, can we capture the courage and heroism of 9/11 and can we find a way to live like it's 9/12? This day and tomorrow are about remembering, are about ensuring the proper story is told.
Journalist turned pastor Jay LaScolia reflects on what he remembers most about 9/11 while anchoring the news that day for WENY television in Elmira.
When I got into the newsroom, I saw reporters and staff members in tears crying, seeing what is transpiring live on TV. And we had people call the newsroom that were in tears. You know, they didn't know where to go or call, so they called the newsroom. And I had one person, I picked up the phone, say, in tears, is the world ending? Is this the end of the world?
LaScolia visited Ground Zero a couple of weeks after 9/11. From that crime scene, he was able to pray with survivors who are still in shock.
And the smoke was still smoldering from the what they called the pile,
yeah,
where the towers had fallen. And what stood out the most was not only covering that and seeing all these missing pictures of people throughout Lower Manhattan, but what stood out the most were these prayer stations. And I'll never forget interviewing a guy by the name of Ron Stensler. And he said, we just want to be here to offer hope because Jesus is the hope of the world. And I walked away from that in Washington Square Park where I had interviewed him. And I heard the Lord say to me and remind me of a call that he had put on my life as a teenager and said, now's the time to go and be a pastor because I am the hope of the world.
LaScolia left TV News and became a pastor because of September 11th, 2001.
One of the greatest things that stood out for me after September 11th, 2001 was this country was united like I hadn't seen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing so much of that after 9/11.
Yeah.
And my only concern for today is, With a pandemic and worldwide global events that have impacted us, I'm not seeing that same unity that we saw after 9/11, and I'm praying for that.
On the eve of the 20th anniversary, two fighter pilots who took off that day to protect the nation's capital are sounding off over the terror attacks. They spoke with CBS News anchorwoman Nora O'Donnell.
Lieutenant General Mark Sasseville and Heather Penny flew F-16s for the Air National Guard. They watched two planes hit the World Trade Center.
We knew immediately that we needed to protect and defend.
You two were flying F-16s that weren't armed with missiles, so how were you going to take down Flight 93?
We were going to have to hit the airplane and disable it somehow.
A kamikaze mission.
Our only choice was going to be to ram the airliner.
It's not something you survive.
No. As the military, we don't send our service members on suicide missions, but it was clear what needed to be done that morning.
It was not an order through the chain of command. It was your call.
We didn't have any other choice.
What they didn't know was that the passengers and crew of Flight 93 fought back and drove the plane into a field in Shanksville.
Nora O'Donnell at CBS. Correspondent Jim Krasula continues our coverage from the Flight 93 Memorial in Shanksville.
It is said that time heals, but does it?
20 years later, it gets you right here. It really does.
Marianne Friend struggled with her emotions, like many who come to the Flight 93 National Memorial.
I just started crying as soon as we came in the place. It's so somber. It's beautiful, but it's so sad.
A tribute to the 40 passengers and crew who took on their hijackers on United Flight 93 20 years ago.
Three of the four hijacked planes that day were bound for the same place, Los Angeles International Airport. The attack's forever changing the way we travel. This woman remembers going to the airport pre-9/11.
No questions, no ID.
Many, however, have no memory of what it used to be like.
Do you know you're going to go through security?
Yeah.
Is it hard for you to imagine that at one time that none of that happened?
Yeah.
So could there be another 9/11? Travel expert Peter Greenberg.
We haven't had a significant attempt or successful terrorism act at a U.S. airport in 20 years.
And Greenberg says that might be our greatest accomplishment in the two decades since 9/11. Still to come on the Noon Report, the loophole in Pennsylvania's mask law, waiting at the bus stop, and New York bracing for a shortage of healthcare workers. First, weekend weather with Kevin Williams.
Well, very good afternoon to all the weekenders here, and much of the time the weather shapes up just fine. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, see you then. Thanks, Kevin. An apparent loophole in Pennsylvania's mask mandate for schools is making it easier for students to not have to cover their faces.
The state's requirement that masks be worn inside K-12 schools took effect Tuesday, but the order includes an exemption for students who claim it would cause or worsen a medical condition. There's no obligation in the masking requirement for a student to produce a doctor's note to substantiate the exemption claim. Now, some schools that oppose the statewide mandate are allowing students to go unmasked with just a parent's signature. Spot checks by the Associated Press of about 50 school districts across Pennsylvania revealed at least a dozen are using exemption forms that do not require a medical professional's signature. This is making it easy for parents to opt out of the mask mandate on behalf of their children. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. School districts in New York continue to struggle with transportation issues due to the shortage of bus drivers. This Rochester woman waited 2 hours for her two daughters to arrive home from school yesterday.
You know, it's been a really nerve-wracking afternoon because I really thought my children were in another place and they were at the school the whole time. I was sitting in my window like a puppy waiting for my children to get off the bus.
In New York, 80% of school districts are having trouble getting kids to and from school on time due to the shortage of bus drivers. New York's COVID vaccine mandate for healthcare workers will backfire, according to public health officials in the Southern Tier. Health officials like Sam Bennett.
You think it's a nursing shortage now? Wait till this is done.
Steuben County Health Director Darlene Smith.
Vaccine mandate, proposed by the governor is, I do believe it is well intentioned. However, I think it's going to be counterproductive.
Smith fears the shot requirement will further exacerbate the shortage of workers in the healthcare industry at a time when COVID cases are soaring.
Who's going to take care of those that are sick? This one mandate inevitably will lead to another completely different public health crisis.
Nurses, doctors, and hospital staff face a September 27th deadline to get the jab or risk losing their job. 80% of New York's healthcare workers, by the way, are vaccinated. A relaxing vacation destination in New York's Finger Lakes region is getting international accolades. The Lake House in Canandaigua has just been named the second best resort hotel in the entire country, the 30th best in the world. By Travel and Leisure magazine, the Lake House was cited for its facilities, location, service, food, and overall value. The Lake House in Canandaigua. The two-minute drill is yours next in sports. Sonny, quite a game last night.
Yeah, what a way to start the 2021 NFL season. The defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers opening up against the Dallas Cowboys. Much closer than expected. The Bucs needing this.
Here's the kick by Succop. Is it good? It is good.
Ryan Succop kicking the go-ahead field goal with just 2 seconds left. Buccaneers beat the Cowboys 31-29, but Tom Brady said, how about them Cowboys?
It's a good team. We're going to have to, we obviously got a lot to clean up.
And while the 44-year-old Brady continues to shine, it's a pair of teenagers who shine the brightest. At the U.S. Open, first 19-year-old Leila Fernandez booked her trip to the final with a three-set defeat of number 2 seed Aryna Sabalenka, Fernandez crediting her team.
I know today we're going to celebrate, but tomorrow they're just going to tell me what we're going to be doing for my next match.
Fernandez will face 18-year-old Emma Raducanu in the final. Raducanu became the first qualifier to reach a Grand Slam final in the professional era by overwhelming 17th-seeded Maria Sakkari 6-1, 6-4, appearing in just her second major tournament. Raducanu won all 18 sets she's played during 3 matches in qualifying rounds and 6 in the main draw. Even she said,
I just can't believe it. A shock.
Today, the men play. Top-seeded Novak Djokovic squares off with number 4 seed Alexander Zverev. 12th-seeded Felix Oze Alassane plays number 2 seed Daniel Medvedev. Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays win their 8th straight game and send the Yankees to their 6th straight loss. They beat New York 6-4. In fact, the Yankees never had the lead during the series. The first time that's happened in a series of 4 games or more since 1924. Still, Aaron Boone believes.
Understand it's been bad this week, but, you know, we've got a great opportunity in front of us.
Toronto is a half game behind the Yankees for the second American League wildcard. The Mets are 5 games out of the National League East. They lose to Miami 3-2. Phillies are 3.5 games back. They fall to the Rockies 4-3. The Nationals lose in 10 in Atlanta. Cleveland beat the Twins. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
All right, Sonny, thank you for that. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Still to come on the Noon Report, the Capital Connection crew. They're back and ready to sound off on the important issues in the news from the state capitals in Albany and Harrisburg. Stick around for that. Also, Kevin Williams in 4 minutes has that weekend forecast. Things are looking good on the weather front. And at the end of the broadcast today, the songs that healed America after 9/11.
Tomorrow marks the 20th anniversary of maybe the most devastating day in American history. It's a day to remember. We should also remember how Christians are to confront evil. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In the days after 9/11, Chuck Colson offered an incredibly good gift to the church, a Christian worldview framework for understanding what had just happened to America, and a roadmap for Christians to both speak truth and to love their neighbors. In fact, just 3 days after 9/11, Chuck directly addressed the many stories that were emerging at the time of Muslims, Sikhs, and others being attacked on American streets. The commentary is a model of applying Christian truth to a most chaotic moment, and it's just as helpful today as 20 years ago. Here's Chuck Colson.
2 horrific terrorist attacks, thousands of innocent people dead. The shock is wearing off, and anger tending toward rage is setting in. Christians have a vital role to play. Sher Singh was born in India and has lived in the United States for 2 years. On Wednesday, when his train from Boston to Washington, D.C. stopped in Providence, Rhode Island, he was arrested, suspected of involvement in the terrorism that rocked the country on Tuesday. Alerted by television reports, a crowd gathered outside the train station. As police led Mr. Singh from the station, the crowd whooped and jeered. "Kill him," yelled one man. "You killed my brother," shrieked another. Mr. Singh, who had absolutely no connection with the terrorism, is a Sikh and wears a turban, a long beard, and a ceremonial dagger strapped to his shoulder. Now, sadly, this is not an isolated incident. Evil in this world begets more evil. It's self-perpetuating, and we're already seeing that in the rage against Mr. Singh and people like him. By sharp contrast, Paul wrote to the Romans, "Overcome evil with good." One of the reasons I believe the Christian gospel couldn't be a made-up religion, as some people think, is that it tells us to do those things which are contrary to our human nature. When evil is done to us, the human instinct is to respond with evil. The result is that evil triumphs. In this case, if we responded to the terrorist attacks with evil, the terrorists win. But the gospel tells us to act exactly contrary to our own nature, to respond to evil with good. The most powerful example of this principle I know is Father Jerzy Papalusko, Catholic priest in Poland in the early 1980s. The pale, gaunt priest had a twofold message: defend the truth and overcome evil with good. People responded and overflowed his church. The secret police followed him everywhere. He began to receive threats, and finally one night after celebrating Mass and preaching, Father Jerzy disappeared. About 10 days later, as 50,000 people came to Mass and to listen to a tape of his last sermon, they heard that his body had been found in the Vistula River, badly mutilated by torture. The secret police braced for an uprising. But on the day of Father Yuri's funeral, the huge crowd that walked past their headquarters bore a banner and shouted what it said, "We forgive, we forgive." Father Yuri taught them well. Only Christians, men and women who are touched by and understand the present reality of the cross, can possibly overcome evil with good. But as the nation's anger rises, there is a great test for American Christians. Can we live by the gospel? Will we love our neighbors, even those who look or sound or seem like those who so ruthlessly attacked us?
That was Chuck Colson from September the 14th, 2001. It's an example of the sort of Christian worldview wisdom that God used Chuck Colson to provide to his people in the days after 9/11. And tomorrow, we're releasing a very special program on the Breakpoint podcast. We put together all of the Breakpoint commentaries from Chuck Colson, dating from September the 12th to September the 19th, 2001. Together, they provide an incredible retelling of the events of 9/11 within a Christian worldview framework. Come to Breakpoint.org to listen, or search for the Breakpoint podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams, weekend weather next.
Here's your family life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, comfortably cool with a mix of clouds and sunshine, a couple of spot showers, especially across portions of central and western New York. High temperatures in the 60s and low 70s. The stars come out tonight. We cool into the mid-40s to the low 50s for many. Some badly fog patches late. A good deal of sunshine tomorrow, warmer than today. High in the 70s and near 80. Sunday, mostly cloudy across New York. We're becoming so with a shower chance. Mostly sunny in Pennsylvania. High temperatures 70s and low 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. It is Friday, September 10th. This is the Noon Report. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are, after a long summer break, Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Gentlemen, it is great to have our dream team back at the table again. Much to discuss over the summer. So much news from both New York and Pennsylvania. Don't know if you knew this or not, Jason, but New York got a new governor since last we chatted. Let's talk about the previous one for just a second. Many are wondering about a possible Cuomo comeback if he is not impeached. Do you think that will happen, the comeback and or the impeachment? What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't see the impeachment happening. I think that ship has sailed. We hope to see that report released that the Assembly has been working on. We understand that millions have been spent in that investigation, and the people of New York deserve to know what was discovered about Governor Andrew Cuomo and the sexual harassment, the nursing homes, and so many other scandals that surrounded that. That being said, it is possible that Governor Cuomo could make a comeback. He is sitting on somewhere between $18 and $20 million in his campaign war chest, and that's a lot of money to rehab an image if he certainly wants to do that. I think he'll probably sit this cycle out, though, but down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if he reemerges in politics somewhere along the line.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll see. I want to ask you about Cuomo's successor, Kathy Hochul, in just a minute, but first, let's head to Harrisburg. Michael Geer, welcome back to the program. Sir, want to ask a question about your governor as well. Now, he had his pandemic powers reined in back in May, so how is it that he can force his way on this face mask debate in school that is raging all across the Commonwealth?
Well, he's doing this mask mandate through unelected bureaucrats. It was an acting Secretary of Health who issued this mandate after the governor said he wouldn't do it. He said that it should be local controls, that school boards should make this decision. Then he asked the legislature to do it, and they refused. And so this unelected bureaucrat, using some legal powers in the law, use the Department of Health to impose this mandate, but already there's a lawsuit that's been filed by the Senate President Jake Corman and Butler School District and other school districts against it. And the legislature is coming back 2 weeks early to vote on restraining this power as well, because they're not happy with what is happening from the Wolf administration.
Yeah, face masks are one thing, Jason. Vaccine mandates are something else. State workers in New York, healthcare employees already subject to vaccine mandates. And with school in session, do you think it will be much longer before students are next in line on the COVID shot hit list, for lack of a better word?
Well, I think it's a matter of time that the legislature is going to try to make that happen. Right now, it is something that there is legislation that has been introduced by Senator Brad Hoyleman in Manhattan that would require that. Senator Hoyleman is not exactly a friend to those who are opposed to vaccination, so he has introduced legislation to add that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the legislature tries to take action when they come back in January.
Yeah. You know, I've been vaccinated. I'm glad I did. You know, people that are vaccinated have every right to do that if that's what's best for you and your family. But there's a certain percentage of the population, Michael, that's just not going to do it. There's nothing, there's no amount of bribery or punitive arrangement you can do that would change their mind. Wondering in Pennsylvania, is there much appetite there for vaccine mandates as this Delta variant surges this fall?
So no, not in the Pennsylvania General Assembly, certainly not with the leadership, the Republican leadership in the House and Senate. They're talking about and there have been proposals to actually ban vaccine mandates in Pennsylvania, although I don't think that's going to get legs either, because the governor would certainly veto that. There are places like Philadelphia and others that are pushing it. We have private employers that are pushing these mandates, and I do think that at some point the governor is going to try to make it happen in the school setting in the same way that he's done it with the masks. But I don't think the legislature is going to sit by and let that happen easily.
All right, let's talk about Kathy Hochul on the job for just a couple of weeks. Jason, give us a progress report thus far. You had said on your website earlier you're hoping that this is someone you can work with. Based on what you've seen 2 weeks in, what kind of governor do you expect her to be, left, right, or in the middle?
Well, I still think she's a person we can have conversations with, but conversation doesn't necessarily mean good public policy. And we're seeing that what is happening with Governor Hochul is looking a lot like Governor Andrew Cuomo. Some have come to begin calling her Cuokul, as just kind of continuation of the same, and we're seeing that. So I think whatever you see in Andrew Cuomo, barring some of the sexual harassment and other things, you will probably see in Governor Kathy Hochul.
All right, Cuokul, we'll see if that one sticks, Jason. We'll hold you to it. There is a lot happening on the sanctity of human life front across this country. Michael, I know you're very pleased to see in Texas that heartbeat bill become law, the Supreme Court refusing to overturn it. And that has ramifications in your state, because Pennsylvania is trying to get through similar legislation. If you would talk where that stands, as well as this first ever March for Life that you have planned coming up here soon at the state capitol.
Yeah, there are significant issues in Pennsylvania on the pro-life front, from the heartbeat bill that's been introduced by Representative Stephanie Borowitz and Senator Doug Mastriano in the House and Senate. That legislation is pending, has passed out of committee in the House. There's other piece of pro-life legislation, but there's also a case before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that could result in a strike down, basically, of all Pennsylvania's pro-life laws. It could result in taxpayer-mandated taxpayer funding of abortion. So there's a lot for pro-life citizens across our state to be concerned about as well as excited about. And that's why we're excited about the Pennsylvania first ever Pennsylvania March for Life, Monday, September 27th, here at the state capitol from 11 to 1. Got a great lineup of speakers, including Abby Johnson and Ryan Bomberger, Speaker of the House Brian Cutler, and others will be speaking. Jeannie Mancini from the National March for Life organization. And we have buses coming, more than 75, I think, at count now. 75 buses coming from every corner of the state, including in the listening area, people who are hearing my voice. People who want to find out about the march and about the buses coming from potentially their area can go to pa.marchforlife.org. That's pa.marchforlife.org.
Again, mark your calendar Monday, September 27th, for that first ever Pennsylvania March for Life. Want to talk about redistricting with both of you. Such an important topic heading into next year's midterms. Of course, both states will lose one congressional congressional seat next year, and the gerrymandering is well underway. How is this process, such a political process, Jason, how is it playing out in the Empire State?
Yeah, it really is a mess here. We're going to lose a congressional seat here in New York. We know that. Where it's going to come from, it's probably going to be upstate New York. And so once again, we're going to see that the hand of New York City is strengthened, while upstate New York is probably going to suffer as a result of the loss of that congressional seat. So the policies downstate continue to hurt upstate, even after the census.
Yeah. Redistricting in Pennsylvania as well. Now, you've got this five-member legislative reapportionment commission, Michael, that's spearheading this. What is that group, and how are they improving this whole process?
Well, the group on the reapportionment committee are the legislative leaders from the House and Senate, the Democrat minority leader in both chambers, and the Republican majority leader in both chambers, and then the former chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh, Mark Nordenberg. They're having hearings, they're taking votes on different policies that they want to enact in terms of redistricting. One of the recent votes, for example, was to count the prison populations in the different districts as part of that reapportionment and figuring out the districts. That's kind of an unusual move. It seems to me it was a 3-2 vote on that particular thing. It's going to be a mess, as Jason called it in New York. It's going to be a mess here in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania has not been winning blue ribbons in terms of doing elections well recently. 2018, the Supreme Court just redrew the congressional districts right in the middle of a primary. So it's going to be a dicey season coming forward.
All right, and we'll see what those lines look like early next year. Jason, we talked about the vaccine mandates. You've got a wonderful article about that on your website in New York. If folks want to check it out, where can they go and learn more?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And hey, that March for Life is quickly coming up in Pennsylvania, Monday, September 27th. If you want information on that or any other policy issue, Pennsylvania, Michael, what's your site, sir?
PAFamily.org.
All right, great to have him back. Capital Connection comes your way Fridays during the Noon Report. Online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A bubble of high pressure will be our fair weather friend heading into the weekend, setting us up for a starlit night tonight and a pretty sunny day tomorrow with a few scattered clouds. A cold front will approach from the north on Sunday. It'll trigger a shower, thunder shower in parts of New York State, but it's any activity it's associated with should hold off in Pennsylvania till Sunday night or Monday. The call for this afternoon, in the meantime, comfortably cool with a mix of clouds and sunshine, a couple of spot showers, especially across portions of central and western New York, high temperatures in the 60s and low 70s. The stars come out tonight. We cool into the mid-40s to the low 50s for many, some valley fog patches late. A good deal of sunshine tomorrow, warmer than today, high in the 70s and near 80. Sunday, mostly cloudy across New York, or becoming so with a shower chance. Mostly sunny in Pennsylvania, high temperature 70s and low 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. And finally at noon, the music that healed America with the 20th anniversary of 9/11 tomorrow. Today, we're listening to some of the songs that helped the nation heal from that day.
I'm already there.
The song "I'm Already There" really took on such a bigger meaning after that tragic day. A song that has brought comfort.
The U.S. military and the deployed soldiers over there that were gone for so long, it really adopted that song and made it part of their lives.
The group Lone Star says they are honored that their song helped the families of the troops overseas heal from the wounds of war. And it was a conversation with former President George W. Bush that inspired Michael W. Smith's song, "There She Stands."
I just remember he looked at me and said, "Hey, W., you need to write a song about that," which I thought was impossible. And then I started to think about all the heroes who died for my freedom. I would not be standing on this piece of dirt if it hadn't been for their sacrifice.
And that is our world for Friday, the 10th of September. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.